This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 303 of the Countdown Podcast, where we take 10 2020 movies and say to them, that is not me signing off on the soundboard. No, it's not.
This Wayne
is just,
requested
I that. Just thought it would be interesting. It turns out, maybe.
It was totally interesting. So interesting when it stays in the background without giving me warning. Hopefully. No one will notice over my voice.
All good, mate. All good.
Welcome. Oh, you can't win.
Yeah. What am I going to say here?
Oh, yeah.
That was it.
Wayne.
That was
I'm
it.
Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We catch you on movies and sometimes television or of awesomeness, but not today. Today, as Wayne has again hinted, today is the big episode of the year, the biggest of last year, really, the top 10 films of 2020.
Now, Paul, how did you find 2020 as a movie year, given the fact that so much shit happened, pandemics, bushfires, Trump, just all kinds of shit, right? How did that affect the movie market for you?
It clearly did.
Figured it completely, right?
Well, we're not going to bother doing a top 10 most anticipated films of 2021, because just look back at our 2020.
Exactly. All of them that didn't come
Tenet
out.
Minus Tenet and maybe Wonder Woman, because nothing else came out, basically. It's all been pushed to this year. So not surprisingly then, my list, not that good.
No. Mine isn't.
Got to be honest.
Why is it either? And I tell you something, before you do a show like this, you start to look around at what other critics think the best movies of, you know, the year were. And without like fail, most of them are art housey kind of like fucking stuff that I've never heard of, basically. Precisely, although I don't know what the fuck that means.
Shock horror.
So you ain't gonna find a lot of this art house shit on my list. I'm gonna pretty much go over some shit that I either really wanted to watch, you've heard us maybe talk about before.
Yeah, some of it. Ooh,
but
definitely.
Place it, you know, and try and say, okay, this is where I am now after that whole year of perspective.
Look, I think, to be fair, our listeners listen to other podcasts and I don't expect them to remember everything we've said about every film.
No.
And much in the same way I don't remember you. Expect you, sorry, to remember anything that I've said about anything.
Ever. So, yeah. I don't know what we did in any of the shows, 302 shows we've done. So there you are. But
the reality is, as much as I've banged on about in previous years, this year not a great year for film. Boy, 2020 really wasn't a great year for film. The things that are on the bottom of my list would not make any other year's top 10, unquestionably.
Me too.
There's probably only the top three on my list would have a chance. Number one, indisputably, however, would be on many, many lists. So
no matter what year.
Obviously, it makes perfect sense, of course, that the higher we go, the better my films get. But there's a point here where I could probably say this would make other lists of top 10s
okay,
of the year.
No, good.
Before this, you can probably just go, this is what we need. Some of my honorable mentions only got 3 stars out of me. I've never had such a low ranking
year. Absolutely. This year.
And I went back and checked. I've seen 155 2020 films. A couple of my lists are registered on Letterboxd. That was 2019. So let's give it a 165 eligible films overall. Right?
I have no idea what I watched.
Maybe 170. Yeah, well, of course, because you don't log these things, Wayne. And I keep telling you it'd be easier if
it absolutely would. And I think that's one of my bullshit New Year's resolutions. I'm logging films.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The other resolution is to destroy your shitty soundboard.
Demented and sad,
but
social.
What a piece of shit.
Oh, wait, sorry.
You're killing
me,
Smalls.
No, shut up, bitch. Shut up. All right.
Let's get into the rest of the episode proper on the other side of this segment that we call the recap.
Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap?
Recounting your views this week is my host, Paul Prezula.
Co-host, yes, sure. First of all, let's start off with the Dumb Guzzler podcast, who's been a good supporter of the show. Thank you, sir. He said, Paul's Doolittle joke was the worst of the year.
Which one was it?
I basically suggested that he did little role.
Oh, that's of course.
I'd put it in the so bad it's good category, though. The only one of the mentioned top 10 pictures, the worst 10 pictures we did last year, worst 10 pictures of the last year we did last week, I should say, was Wahlberg, Spencer for Hire. What a turd, awful. So I think that was on your list, Wayne. So
yes.
Thank you for that, Dumb Guzzler. The So Is It podcast, Joey from that show, good friend of the show. Joey's going to be my special guest on this month's edition of our favorite films of all time.
What 10 are you doing?
We'll be doing 51 to 60, if I'm not
mistaken.
How
do you know what that is?
So,
amazing. Amazing.
Just, It's not that amazing, Wayne. You just sit down and you work it out. And Joey's been good enough to do so. He said, thank you for taking a big dump on She Dies Tomorrow. That movie sucked giant balls.
Dude, I see that on a lot of people's best of lists. Oh, it's fucking... You know, I'm almost intrigued to watch it just for that.
Go for it. I would love to hear your thoughts.
I mean, if you hated it, what are the odds?
Anyway. Well, it might be very interesting. Anth, another good supporter of the show, said, I must thank you both for probably saving me 6 to 8 hours of my life. Had a fair few of the films you decreed last week on my watch list. They've now been deleted.
Ah, look at that.
Thank
Trust.
You. Thank you for that very much. And then the first vote in the 2021 Facebook listening community, links in the show notes. Who had the superior list of worst films of 2020, Wayne?
I feel like I need to grease up on this one.
Smashed last year. You beat me by so much we stopped counting and started having jokes by the end of the year. Yes, I did win and won comfortably 39 votes to 20.
Oh my God, that's almost double.
Yeah, but still, it was a lot more than 10, which is always our magic
Even
marker.
So, good point
there. B-Dizzle, Billy Dunham from the We Watch the Thing podcast said, voting Paul because I feel bad for him after last year. Poor guy needs a win. I think I got a lot of sympathy votes this week. Samuel Joseph, however, a card-carrying member of the Wayne voting block said, he definitely does, in reference to me needing a win, but the Wayne voting block lives on.
I don't know what anyone's talking about. Thank you, Samuel.
Thank you. Then the cousin vote weighed in and he said, Paul, Warren G,
my cousin,
said, Paul, enough about the horror, man. Got bad news for you, Warren G. Don't reckon I was going to win your vote anyway, but anyway, there we are. Moving on to Timothy Cormack. He actually said a film you haven't seen, Wild Mountain Thyme, horrendous movie along with more horrendous accents.
Thyme, like the herb?
Yeah, did I say it
the
wrong?
The herb?
Thyme?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
I could be
one.
Wrong. I don't know.
No, I reckon you're right. Adam Allure said, again, Paul wins for shitting all over Anne Hathaway. That film should have been Wayne's number one.
Oh, yeah, it could have been, but the Anne Hathaway, come on, people, get off Anne Hathaway.
And I'm not even going to touch that joke, because why would you want to be on there?
Okay, because I was drawing you in,
no
man.
One
That's what I'm saying. Bitch, please, she's beautiful. Hey? God, bitch, hey. Please.
She's not beautiful.
She does look like a Disney princess. Come on now.
She's awful.
Oh,
looking.
God.
And Adam totally agrees with me. Thank you, Adam, for that one. Chris O'Neill said, Paul was properly dick punched by Wayne at the end of last year. This is a sympathy vote for sure.
Hey, fair enough.
And lastly then, from Lachlan Mills, Paul gets my vote this time. Strictly speaking, Wayne lost my vote this time. The only film out of the 20 I did see was Wonder Woman 1984, and I quite liked it.
Then we weren't going to agree on this one. No, fair didn't. Enough. Fair
Even
enough.
I didn't like that one, but good. I'm glad that it's derived pleasure for some of our listeners. All right, that's the end of the recount for this week. Let's get into the countdown proper. The best 10 films here on the other side of this is a stupid. Is the subject of this week's countdown. We've already talked about 2020. Wayne, I believe it's you who are away this week. What is your 10th best film of the year and how angry am I going to be?
Everyone, my number 10 is it's an indie film.
What?
That's how tough what? This year got, man. Oh, it's an indie film.
Hot damn!
Yeah, and it's on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Get Duked.
Right.
Now,
I have heard about this on the Soulsy podcast.
Because I was searching around and I was like, you know what? I saw the trailer. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to watch that. Now, Get Duked is about a group of four high school students in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this thing called the Duke of Edinburgh Award, which is it's designed to basically make like youths go out into the Scottish countryside and do this sort of, you know, they have to camp and do shit and go all the way through it and meet at the coast. And then they get this fucking certificate of merit. And apparently it's very good for your university, according to the movie anyway, you know, right. your resume.
It helps your graduation.
Exactly.
Get your jobs.
Exactly. Now, there's everyone except, there's Eddie Izzard is in it and Kate Dickie. Do you know who Kate Dickie is?
Nope.
She's like, okay, she was in like Hot Fuzz and shit. Anyway, those are the only names in there. The rest of it are just kids. Now, this is a little bit weird. It actually feels a bit like Hot Fuzz and it is a comedy with quite good humor and a surprising amount of gore. Paul, you may
what?
Actually like
no.
this. It means
what?
That, yeah, these four kids go out and they're all assholes, right? Like one of them is a really honest, like kind of nice kid, right? The rest of them are all dickheads. There's one called DJ Beetroot and there's another one called this Larrikin motherfuckers, right?
How did you feel that I'm stealing your name?
It's B-E-A-T, root, so yes. and they're just sniping at each other, so that's pretty funny. It's a bit like The In-Betweeners, with them shitting on each other, right?
Yep. English, well, Scottish sensibility.
Exactly, very much so. And I did have to turn on the subtitles just for a moment. We'll tell you that.
Inconceivable.
But they then get set upon by this hunter who purports to be the Duke of Edinburgh, who's got a mask and everything. And he basically shoots at them, right? He keeps shooting at them and is trying to kill them now by chasing around the countryside because he does.
Get duped.
Yes, get duped, right? What I was impressed with is that the gags are nonstop. They're bang, 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 bang.
Definitely gonna check this one out.
Okay. Yeah, and you might like it because it's what I would say is it's unexpectedly endearing. And this is on my list purely as a mismatch of my expectations versus the reality.
Sure. Like,
I expected nothing. I'm like, oh, this is all right. And the teens in the center, they're all assholes, but somehow you don't mind them. Very hard to do.
So you want them to survive.
Yeah, you do. You're actually on board with them, even though I don't like children. So it's
this is true.
Yeah, so there you are. So Get Duked. Worth a shot if it's late in Amazon and you're in a mood for something Scottish.
All right. Fair enough. Thank you very much for that one. I am intrigued and looking forward to it. My number 10 is going to be the first shots fired of this episode. And, you know, there's a part of me, like I said, wouldn't be on any other list any other year. Okay, fully acknowledge my number 10.
Justification.
But I enjoyed it. It was good fun. It broke up when the world was in a pretty shitty place mid-year. I got a lot of pleasure out of this one and thought it was far superior to another film that's going to be on the list. I'm talking about Gina Prince Bythewood's The Old Guard.
I knew you'd fucking put this on here. I was sitting there, you know, I was scratching so hard I thought about it, but I'm like, you know what? But a lot of other folks who are more learned than I do actually agree with you. Go on.
Look, I just think Charlize Theron is a revelation. Just about anything she's in, she's never bad.
She may be like one of the best actors I've ever seen, in terms of like contemporary.
And she gives a lot of life to this person who can never die and has been leading this group of similar death-defying people. Immortals. That's what I'm looking for. Who suddenly can just suddenly die out of the blue, which adds an element of risk to things. And then
totally.
They run across this farmer head dude who's terrible, and he's the worst part of the film, who then sets all his people upon them to try to bring them in.
That, I think, was what gave me the shits. The bad guy was too shit.
Yeah. Had that actually been a bad guy with some gravitas, with some...
Or anything.
Gravitas, I should say, or some threat to them.
He was just a little bitch. Yeah, that's what the problem.
It was terrible. It was very badly cast.
Odd call.
Very. And maybe it comes from the source material, which is this is a comic book adaptation. So,
yeah.
But some great action scenes in it. A lot of fun.
I have to agree with that.
Enjoyed the... It seemed to run fly by for me. When I saw the end of it, I'm like, okay, that was Netflix delivering what they promised for a change, rather than, oh, here's all your bunch of these great actors in the film, which is like, meh.
I will say this. Of the Netflix releases in 2020, that's definitely up near the top. Like, Yeah, it's one of the ones.
I suspect there's another one coming.
Yep,
which is the one we've argued back and forth about all year. So that's my number 10, The Old Guard.
Well, speaking of which, my number 9 is Extraction.
There it is. At least it's low down the list. I wasn't sure how high it was.
I played around with it and I toyed with making my number 1 just to piss you off it.
Don't say shit like that when I've got a mouthful of drink.
Everyone, this is Chris Hemsworth. Just John Wicking his way around India.
How dare you? Don't use that word.
He plays... he's better than John Wick. The action is far better than John Wick 3 and 2.
What the hell?
Say 2. Definitely 2.
No!
You know what? 1 and 2. No! 1 and 2, bitch. That's how your mama. So, and he's a black market mercenary. He has to go into India. He has to bring this drug dealer's son out. There's a double cross. There's a lot of fights. There's a lot of him beating the piss out of lots of people at a time and shooting motherfuckers. It is very, very incredibly good. And the reason it's on my list here is because it delivers exactly what it promised you. And it does it with aplomb. There's actually these one shots that
go
everywhere.
There's a couple of great one shots.
Insanely
good.
One
particular great one shot. Yeah. Good action. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Just otherwise, the story is bare bones. And
Paul doesn't like that it ended slightly hopeful.
The end is fucking...
The ending's great. In fact, the ending made me feel better. I'm like, you know what? Great, almost an hour and a half, whatever I spent. I was like, that's fine. That's absolutely great. This, for me, was it the best? It's definitely among the top Netflix releases this year, for sure.
Yeah, I've got one Netflix film.
Yeah, I'm sure there's another one here I haven't thought about. But one of the best surprises I had in cinema in 2020.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of that going on. And of course, most of these we saw at home. We saw at home.
Totally.
On our TV screen.
So it's a whole different thing, man. I ain't got like Paul's pimped out fucking studio experience, fucking big ass screen.
You've got a big screen.
Paul just dropped his phone, everyone, and we're leaving it in because it's awesome.
Whoops. Sorry about that. Wayne, I've gestured expansively to his living area where he does have a big screen TV. He just doesn't plug anything into it because
I'm always in the man cave. I got these two screens. This is how I roll. Anyway, yes.
So, yeah, I think it's fine, that film. I didn't hate it. I just didn't love it the way that you seem to have. And some people seem to.
Yeah, I think it's just simple, good, fun, and I'm a simple bad man.
Okay, fair enough. My number nine is also one of those, a little bit like Get Juked for You.
Mm.
Love and Monsters for me at number nine.
What's this one now?
Is a film that it was going to be released at cinemas. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, directed by Michael Matthews. It's got a mid-range budget. I would guess without looking it up, it's, you know, that $40 million range. And it stars, is it Dylan O'Brien? Yes. Basically, it's a monster apocalypse happens,
mm-hmm.
and it's years afterwards or 3 years afterwards, something along those lines. I can't remember off the top of my head. And he decides that he's pretty sick of his life living with a bunch of survivors in the bunker that they're in.
Yeah.
He's going to travel across the surface to get to his girlfriend, who at least the girlfriend at the time of this all happened.
Yeah.
Because they've stayed in touch by radio.
Got it.
But that's their relationship. Because he wants to go and basically...
Hit.
Yeah, and win her back.
Be with your lady. Yeah, I get it.
Because he thinks that'll be a better life. And
of course it will.
He meets up with a dog very early on. Then
dog!
Hooks up with Michael Rooker and a kid, which sounds way worse than it actually is. But this film is charming. And there's a really good message in there. The effects aren't stellar at that budget level, but they're solid.
Is it a horror?
Well, no. It's an adventure.
So you see monsters?
You see monsters come after him, whatever else. I wouldn't show my 7-year-old, but absolutely anyone else is more than fine.
No, if it's on your top 10 list. Yeah, okay, Love really and Monsters.
Love and Monsters. Really surprising, really heartfelt, quite funny in places.
American film?
Yeah, American film. It's a shame because I think this film would have made money and it probably would have set off a chain of films. Like there would have been at least another one after this.
Yeah.
Because it ends on a very open sort of note, but not in a bad way. Not in a you're frustrated way. It closes up the
not in a cheap way, yeah.
Yeah, the thematic elements, but it leaves the world open for further exploration. And yeah, and why wouldn't you? It's a lot of fun. All the monsters in it are basically insects that have grown massive.
Oh, really?
Insects, other animals.
Ooh, triggery. Okay. Wow. All right, that's cool. I actually had barely heard of that one, but now that I know what it's about, it's a bit better.
I think number one on a top 10 last time I did, but I don't expect you to remember that, Wayne, because that was at least 3 weeks ago.
I couldn't tell you what I ate this morning. Okay, my number eight, everyone, is Fat Man.
Wow.
I loved Fat Man, dude. I was thinking about it the other day.
Ooh, Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast is right now punching the air.
I'm telling
Wayne's
you.
Wayne's my boy.
This is the shit, man. This movie's got Mel Gibson in it, and it's got Walton Goggins as a hitman in it. Mel Gibson is playing Santa Claus, and he's a real person who's been living for hundreds of years. And he's still sort of doing his Santa Claus thing. He's commissioned by the U.S. government. There are monetary concerns. There's real elves. There's guns. There's hitmen. He's a badass of sorts and somewhat superhuman. Now, the way it's all played, given that this is a smallish movie, I just liked it and actually recommended it to a few people, including my 17-year-old niece, who said it was great. So I think this is definitely one of the best movies I saw this year. I mean, like, it's
clearly
it's on my eight. But everything that it wants to hit, it hits. And Paul had a problem with no elves getting killed. Right?
Well, I had a problem with that. I think this is two different movies. I think this is one movie which is a comment on capitalism and all the rest of it and how Santa would work in a real way in this grounded kind of world. And then there's this hitman revenge film. The two just don't meld that all together. I got bored of one waiting for the other. When the other finally comes, I'm like, too little, too late.
Really? Melded perfectly for me. And well, to be honest with you, it wasn't even that I wanted it to meld. I was looking for moments and I got them. So yeah, I'm down with that. Fat Man, everyone. Not, surprisingly, my autobiography.
Come now, come on. Nowhere near that bad yet.
Give it a second.
Give it a hot minute. Talk about it in the best films of 2021.
That's right.
We'll return to that. No. My number eight is similarly another surprise. It was one of those premium video on demand films. I think it was also meant to come out at the cinema. It's one of those films which has just got really no one of consequence in the cast, but names that you're, or people that you'll recognize. Like, I mean, Orlando Bloom's probably the biggest name in the film.
Pretty big name.
Scott Eastwood, so Clint Eastwood's son. Caleb Landry Jones from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, that guy. And the film with American Made with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It's called The Outpost. It's directed by Rod Lurie.
Do you know, I've seen this thing come up on my queue, and in my head, because I can't remember anything, I seem to remember you admonishing this film.
Nope.
No, you like it, right?
It was my one or two in the top 10 last 10.
Tell us what it's about.
So basically, it's based on a true story of a small group of US soldiers in this outpost deep in the mountains of Afghanistan, set around the time of the Afghanistan War, so I can't remember exactly how many years ago.
Sure.
My apologies. But basically, they have mountains on either side. Big hills on either side, basically. And the enemy basically come wandering in and can just take pot shots at them every day. It's the From dumbest. The hills? Yeah, it's the dumbest fucking place ever. And I can't remember why it's so important, but it is important. That whole
did they not this, see the third Star Wars film? Higher ground, people. You're in a kill box.
2009, so the Battle of Kamdesh it leads to. And so they do eventually get attacked. And this small little outpost of these heroic soldiers try to hold the line against these overwhelming forces. Got rocket launchers and shit and just raining death from above them. And then they come swarming in.
Wow.
And so the first half of them was setting up life in that environment and sort of the sudden and tragic deaths that can occur in that kind of environment. And the second half is basically one big battle as they're trying to survive. And this film works.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, you... Particularly the two main leads, Scott Eastwood and Caleb Landry Jones, you really do come to like, oh, fuck, are these two going to live?
Is this, how would this compare to, say, Black Hawk Down?
I like this movie better than Black Hawk Down. Oh, that's a big statement.
That is, because that's a good movie.
Black Hawk Down, my problem with that is everyone's so interchangeable, you can't tell who's who in good that point. Movie, right?
Eric Banner, that's it.
Yeah, well, because he's Eric Banner.
Exactly. Right. Probably.
But for us, that makes sense.
That's true. Ewan McGregor's in that. You can barely remember it.
There's so many people in that movie, you barely remember them in it. They are just faces in a uniform.
True.
And I guess that's what Ridley Scott was going for, whereas this film, they give them characterization enough that you come to recognize and care for most of the characters.
Very good.
So it's not as big a budget as Black Hawk Down.
No, but...
But it does well with what it... You can see the CGI
explosions. If you like it more than the big budget Black Hawk Down, this is worth a look.
But I haven't seen Black Hawk Down in 20 years or whatever it is, 18 years, so...
Still. Okay, that's cool. Now that I know you like it, I'll probably watch it. Yeah,
definitely check it out. Again, of course, I'm bringing it up because it's on my... But this film wouldn't make any other list.
Yep, that's fine. Really clear. That's fine. We're dealing in the hand we were dealt.
3.5 star film.
Totally. Okay. Nice. Now, everyone, my number 7 is Tenet.
Ah, jeez.
Is it on your list at all, Paul?
No!
Really? Excellent. Good. We're about to have a discussion.
To do Hans Zimmer's Tenet score.
Yeah, all right. So... because it's Dirac Records.
Yep.
All right, listen up, people. Tenet. We talked about it on two separate shows. We did two different reviews on it.
We were so excited.
We were so excited. It was the biggest thing that ever came out.
In fact, it was our first trip back to the cinema. Oh, maybe I'd seen Follow Me just before, but... Terrible.
Oh, we went back. Yeah, we went back to see Tenet.
Not after, but when COVID relaxed a bit around these parts, it was the first critical screening.
Yep.
We got invited back to, and it wasn't packed. It was a Friday morning. We took days off work, both of us.
We totally did.
That said, it was quite the experience. Dude. Please, back to you.
Man. Okay, so it was quite the experience, and here's what I would tell you. Here's the problem with Tenet, okay? Here's why it's number 7 for me, right? And not anywhere near the top 5, right? I watched Tenet a lot. I've watched Tenet 4 times.
Wow.
Okay. And the more I watched it, the more I realized what the problem with it is. Now, first of all...
Shitty sound design.
Yes, that. So let's just get that out of the way. Completely fucked up. I do like the film, and sound aside, it is a well-made film. Oh, you cannot look at any scene and say that's a bad scene. You just can't. Everyone's good at their job. It's in fact masterful filmmaking execution-wise, all right? Because it looks great. However... And remember now, I got no problem with a smart movie. I don't mind it when a movie asks a lot of you, so long as it's interesting. The difference between this movie and, say, Inception, there are very specific scenes where they set it up. They put, this is what we do. This is we go into dreams. We, you know, whatever, we try and get information.
Sure.
They show you the Paris scene where it's folding in on itself, and it's amazing, and you remember. And that exposition goes for like a whole scene, man, with him and Ariadne and whatever, right? There's scenes which to lock this up. Internet, there is no scene.
There's one
10-second scene where the scientist tells him shit, right? That's it. So the problem is, like, I expect some not that much from a movie that's trying to fool you, but at the very least, you need to tell me what it is. There's not enough scenes in Tenet that give you enough to go on so that you can now enjoy the rest of the movie having known the rules. You go through it not knowing the rules, really. You have an idea of the rules, but then you have to watch it 4 times to be half as confused as me, right? So in Tenet, you're like, why is he chasing that lady? How come there's someone trying to kill him? Why is he going here? Kenneth Branagh's the bad guy, but what does he want? I actually don't know, and I'll tell you something else. I don't want to be this guy, the stupid guy.
Don't spoil anything too hard.
Okay, but I'll tell you this. Who is the bad guy, really? In Tenet, because there's someone sending bullets back in time. It's not actually clear who that is. It's not Kenneth Branagh, the baddie of the show. It's someone else, and I've heard theories about who it might
be. Well, they make the point of saying that the future believes to undo our past will fix what their problems are.
But who's doing it?
Yeah, we don't know.
Someone gave him that shit, you know what I mean? Yep. So it's like, and so now, this isn't, I know it's the idea is that it's not giving you all the answers you want, you got to figure it out. Not good enough. you can do that, but you still need to make me have something to hang on to so I can follow the movie. I find myself at one stage, every time I watch this movie almost, to just going, oh, so I guess I'm not going to understand this, so I should just enjoy the scene. That's not what I should be doing. I should be so enveloped in the movie that I need the next scene, not let's just see if something blows up now. That's what ended up happening with this movie.
For you.
So,
okay.
For
but,
me, but anyway.
It still climbed into seventh for you.
It's seventh this because of how well it's made, and it's the biggest thing in the year. It's a bright... I thought about it so much, it can't not be in my top 10.
Fair
but
enough.
It ain't high. So, you know.
Whereas for me, it's higher, and a fair bit higher on my list because...
Of course, I expect...
Not all the problems that you had. Because I agree, I 100% agree on the sound design. But I think I had a pretty good grasp of this film after the second time. If anything, my second viewing lowered it because I was a bit more confused by a couple of things I thought I had a grasp on. Mm. And also, there's a couple of things that I worked out that didn't satisfy me the way that I was imagining it to be.
Do you know why that is? It's because the movie itself doesn't give you enough to go on where you can formulate things as you watch. You're watching it the second time and the things that you saw, they're no longer true from the first time. That means you didn't have enough of a purchase on the movie for the first time.
Look, to be honest, I'm not sure I just got it wrong the second time. And I'm looking forward to a third viewing of it. I will buy this one on 4K. I will watch the shit out of this on 4K. I really adored this film. And I get it, those people who say it was indecipherable, I didn't understand it. That's fine. I'm not taking a shot at you and not understanding
it. No, it was indecipherable insofar as you watching it one time.
You might not remember, but I had that moment of an epiphany, really, in the middle of the film. Now what's going to happen.
I do remember.
And it was such a rush that, like, I get it. I get what this movie's going for. It's working for me.
Again, it's on my list, but like when you have... This movie is trying to make you watch it a bunch of times and talk about it, which we all did. So on that level, it succeeded, but I could have used it being more enjoyable throughout, like Inception was. And it's because
I'm not comparing. I'm just saying it's a better film.
It didn't tell me enough, and it, on that level, it's trying to be a little too clever.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, that's a fair accusation, I think.
Yeah,
but I know a lot of people are very disappointed by that movie, and maybe that's our expectations going in. Mine were met, and that's very rare for me with film going experiences. I have these big expectations.
I would argue that mine were met too, but I just found this experience less satisfying. So, and that's what I've always said this since the first throw.
And if nothing else,
is what you should go for.
There's no film, again, in a very qualified year, a very asterisked year, that has generated more discussion than Tenet.
Agreed.
Cons against the Nolan. And I guess I'm a Nolan fanboy, but I don't like things without question. Like
we do. I am a Nolan, massive Nolan fan.
Person.
But like person, yeah. Yes. But if that, you know,
he said having just said fanboy, but yeah, I'm a massive Nolan fan. The reality is, not all his films are great.
Agreed, agree completely. And it like it's nice. It makes you know he's human. Great.
Yep. And I like this one much more than Dunkirk. That said,
me too.
I think I said during the review that I would go back and rewatch Dunkirk and see whether I have a greater appreciation for it. Yet to do so.
I suspect if I did that, I'd like it more. Mm. But yeah, there you are.
All right, that's your seven. My seven, boy, from one end of the spectrum, $250 million. But the biggest budget film, I think, along with Wonder Woman released in 2020, to something incredibly low budget, grindhousey, but just a throwback to films that I love, for these exploitation films. It's from very early. It's a 2019 film technically, but didn't come out here to download or view until 2020. It's called VFW, directed by a low-budget filmmaker named Joe Bagos. And it stars Stephen Lang, George Wendt, Fred Williamson, Martin Coe from Cobra Kai and The Karate Kid, and William Sadler. I think that's right.
Expendably bullsy?
Well, it's just a bunch of dudes who are VFW sort of returned veterans. Yep. They're just in their bare bar. It's set in some sort of slightly dystopian future, and the drug dealer across the road, someone steals all his shit and comes into their bar saying, help me, this girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do the right honorable thing, and the guy says to all these people who are so zombified / jonesing for hits that you get that back and kill her, I'll give you as much as you want, which basically sends wave after wave of these users against these
druggies.
Veterans.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these veterans versus druggies. It's incredibly violent. It's so over the top.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember you talking about this and how much you liked it.
Yeah. Look, for a long time, it was my favorite horror film of the year. The more I thought about it, it's less a horror film, more an exploitation film with lots of gore. There's some incredible gore in this movie. And so you can't wait. Very synthy music score, very assault on Precinct 13. If that's your jam, you must check out VFW, but it's not for everyone, including Warren G. So I fully acknowledge.
Is the violence like schlocky, or is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's exploitation cinema to a T. So
that's fine.
Not for everyone, but if you're into this kind of thing, you must check out VFW.
Very nice. My number six is a late entrant, which I saw on a whim. It's called The Personal History of David Copperfield.
Okay.
Now, this is
Amazon Prime film?
It is indeed on... I'm not sure, actually. Sorry. I got it somewhere, is all I got to say.
You watched it.
I watched it. Now, it's got Dev Patel, Hugh Laurie, Tilda Swinton, Ben Whishaw, a bunch of other folks in there, okay? And Doctor Who, Peter
Capaldi.
Capaldi, yeah. This movie is about David Copperfield, and it's this wonderfully sort of like colorblind casting where they put Dev Patel as David Copperfield, who has white parents. It doesn't matter. None of those things matter in this thing.
Cool.
Wonderful. And it is, I would say, it's actually about his life, okay? It's just him telling a story about his life, but it has flourishes in here that I would compare in tone to like a Tim Burton movie, except not depressing. Like, just like for Big Fish, for example. It starts
magic
like this.
And wonder.
Yeah, and he's like, and the way that they do it, it's a bunch of split screens and like, you know, so for example, at the beginning, he's talking to this, he's in a theater, he's on stage, and he's talking to people in the audience. He says, "This is my life." It's like he's doing a PowerPoint, although it's way back then, so it wasn't PowerPoint. And what happens is behind him turns into, from the stage, into like he's in a massive field somewhere where his story starts. And then he walks towards the field, the camera comes around, and in that field, which is in a real field, the front row of the audience is still just sitting there in the field behind him, just as a throwaway thing.
Right.
So it's that kind of cool shit that goes on, and it's, I would say that everything is like a pinball machine. The everything that happens, like ping, 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 it's just cool line, cool thing that happens, cool looking scene, cool, and it doesn't let up. The whole movie is very entertaining and quite uplifting. So even though harsh shit happens in it, it's not a kid's film. It's really just kind of cool. It's just like a bracing and entertaining kind of rich, satisfying experience.
All right.
So yeah, The Personal History of David Copperfield, do recommend. My number six.
Well, I hope so. If it's only top 10 films of the year. That said, I've seen it somewhere. I thought maybe it was Amazon Prime. I could be completely wrong. Not seen it, so not much more to add. Sorry.
Yeah, that's cool. A lot of folks, I don't know if it's for everyone, but it is for hedonists like myself. Okay. How's that?
Fair enough. I wonder if my six will be on your list, Wayne. This is my highest ranking Netflix film of the year. It was one that I wasn't surprised to really enjoy, except for the fact that, normally speaking, I have trouble with this writer-director's dialogue in his films. I'm talking from Aaron Sorkin, The Trial of Chicago 7.
Lou! Great choice.
So obviously it's on your list. We'll see how high it goes.
Good Lord, yes.
Look, this film is so
I thought you were cool on this one.
No, I gave it 3.5 stars.
Okay, yeah. Right.
And again, probably wouldn't make any other list from the previous years. Maybe it might sneak in at 10 somewhere to give you an indication.
Yeah.
Possibly. But the thing that bothers me about Sorkin films, as I've just hinted, is the dialogue. In this particular case, most of it takes place in a courtroom where you have to speak more eloquently. So it didn't rub me as wrong. Even though there are scenes obviously outside the courtroom, it didn't bother me in this way. So I got past that criticism I have of most Sorkin films, The Social Network included. He didn't direct that, obviously he wrote it.
We've long discussed how I think it's great and it's entertaining, and you're like, no, but it's not realistic. Yeah. And I'm like, it doesn't have to be. But yeah, I get that.
So this trial of these wrongfully accused seven people was he part of the seven?
Who?
The guy, what's his name? The leader of the Black Panthers. So, Bobby Seale.
I think he might have
Was he considered part of the seven, or was he the eighth?
I can't remember now, actually. Either way. But yeah, either
so,
way.
And Bobby Seale, so played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, basically unfairly picked on by the government at the time to try to pin upon them these sort of race riots that happened in the late 1968. And look, it's just filled with great turns, particularly by Sacha Baron Cohen, who might get an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor, I reckon.
You know what? I think I'm fine with that. Borat can do that. I mean,
that's the point. Yeah, Borat can act.
That's right. And you like Skeletor. He was good. Frank Langella.
Frank Langella is probably the best villain of 2020.
I know.
He was so hateable.
You detest him and the way he is and how, you know, I think that...
Are you trying to accuse me, sir?
Yeah.
That no one in my... Excuse me, being racist? And then even Joseph Lord Gordon-Levitt's character is like, are you really sure about that? Or whatever he says.
Yeah, holier than thou and entitled, and just you hate everything about him. This is very high on my list. And I think
totally
definitely
the
Netflix movie of the year in terms of what happens. I always say electric when I talk about Aaron Sorkin dialogue. Absolutely. But even when he's making people do annoying little things and it's like a tick or something that they say or the way he's cutting, then that actually agitates you, but it agitates you just right. I think he's an excellent filmmaker. As good a writer as he is, he's great with this.
I think it's a step up from Molly's Game, which was his directorial debut.
Oh, God, I love Molly. I think I love Molly Game better.
Just because it's got Jessica in it.
I don't know, but it sure didn't hurt. So, you know. But
yeah, well, I mean, if you haven't seen this film, I'm not sure what you're doing in 2020 in the year that we've had.
It's a drama. It's a court drama, people.
But also, yeah, Black Lives Matter and all the rest of that happened around the same time, which...
made it more meaningful.
Well, it made it impact home.
Well, current at least.
I think even more from someone, an outside American perspective, I think like that drove it home even further for us sitting out here. So made it more powerful is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No, I'm agreed. This is the...
Terrible though all that shit was.
Terrible. Well, yeah, great production. So nice work.
So yeah, congratulations to Sorkin for cracking my top 10 of the year list.
Huge praise from this man. Very nice. My number 5 is The Invisible Man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man.
This is a straight out thriller / horror.
It totally is.
Features this highly on not on my list.
Not on your list. Yeah, I actually think this is the thing though, right? This is coming from a non-horror fan who's surprised he found a horror.
But it's on stacks of critics' lists.
Bro.
Like, this is the big genre winner of the year, I think.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, I think what I like most about it is that you're taking the failed MGM franchise and you're now making it contemporary, and it turns out that was the right move. This is like... This would have been something completely different than the Tom Cruise thing.
The Dark Universe?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, is that the Dark Universe? It's called the Dark Universe.
Is it MGM?
Anyway, sorry. One of the monsters, Universal. I'm sorry, Universal. Yeah, so this Invisible Man property was farmed out and they just said, well, let's just make it this. And then the way that they do it, first of all, Elizabeth Moss is insanely
she's
good.
Excellent.
I don't know what it is about her, but she's just something on a screen. Like, you can't forget her, and you see everything, everything she feels.
I think she does so much with so little. Like, there's not a lot of dialogue in this movie. It's mostly expression and posture that she conveys so much in. Like, that whole opening scene, which is just her escaping her abusive partner's house. She's doing a lot with a little, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, actually. And you feel so harrowed when she's feeling it. So that's cool. The actual mechanism by which the dude is invisible, great. Okay? Don't give me a fucking potion anymore. This is fine, man. Right? They actually go to the trouble of showing this suit with cameras, external, this, that, whatever. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't work every single... you could argue a couple of things, no doubt. All right? But for a horror-ish film or whatever you call it, right? This is good. This is... I found myself buying into it. Like, yeah, sure, he's a tech guy and they came up with this stuff and here you go. Like, if you showed yourself an iPhone 20 years ago, you'd shit your pants and think it was witchcraft, right? You would. You'd sit there and go, you're not even close to fucking mobile phones. What's this TV you have on your hand?
20 years ago, we had mobile phones.
Did we?
Yeah.
30 years ago. So, you know, I'm down with that. But then even, like, the actual ending of the film, I found myself very satisfied. And that means that they... successfully manipulated my emotions to make me want this to happen, and then they gave it to me. So this is the shit, I reckon.
Look, I'm really pleased that a horror... Basically,
I'm hugely surprised.
A horror film's on your list, so I'm not knocking it at all.
Again, 2020, but yeah. I've recommended this to like tons of people, and everyone... Yep, you're right, that was great.
I had too high expectations, I think. The other thing you're not mentioning...
Chicks love this film.
Which I think is really good is the use of negative space, which I know we mentioned during our review a long time ago. Like, camera pans over, nothing there, holds, comes back. Was he there? We don't know. Sometimes doesn't give you that answer or not.
Exactly. And more importantly, this is a hack to cheap filmmaking. You don't even have to spend a penny on costume or this. All you have to do is frame as though there's someone there. Yep. And that guy's got 20 less days on the set. You know what I mean? And way less props production. So I think that shit is cool. It's just a great idea and it was executed really well.
Fair enough. I know lots of people love that one. So yeah. I'm not knocking it. I just, there's a couple of script things that really threw
me out of
that movie. Didn't work for me at all. But fair enough. What film that did work for me, which is also a pseudo horror, but it's a horror comedy. It's Freaky.
I was wondering if you were going to put this on here. Freaky. This is high, motherfucker.
Yeah, well, that's, again, 2020. And this...
I have to put a label in here. By the way, BT Dubs, 2020.
Yeah. That will become like a
catchphrase. This shit is 2020, motherfucker.
Hashtag 2020.
That's right. Or if something's fucked up, like, man, this is so fucking 2020.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You heard it here first. Along with the hashtag, which hasn't caught on yet much to my disgust after our Wonder Woman review, Justice for Handsome Guy. Freaky is a very straightforward story from the guy who did Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You and Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, Christopher Landon, Landon's son.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a body swap film in a horror movie. So... the killer stabs one of his intended victims with a magic knife.
Enchanted knife, yes.
They change bodies. Now killer is in a 17-year-old girl's body and 17-year-old girl is in this killer's body. Vince Vaughn and Catherine Newton killing it. Both of them. Vince Vaughn in particular, I think, but maybe that's just because it might have been a
he
little
He gets
unfair.
To do more because he has to act like a girl and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas Catherine Newton just has to act scary.
Yes.
And just narrow her eyes. But she does it very well.
Fine. You know, not fine. They're both, not much you can do with that.
Both very, very good. And she does give an air of menace. Obviously not the same as 6 foot six or whatever the fuck he is, Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
Great film. Very funny in places. Very progressive. Some great kills, which I think is where
like
Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day 2 neuters itself a little bit. So Chris Alana getting to embrace the hard R of this film.
Remember, his really. dad is an angel.
He's
highway to heaven. What's up?
His dad literally would be, therefore, at this point in time. Love the shit out of this movie. Would happily watch it again tonight. It was
what?
Such fun.
You liked it that much?
Yeah, such fun.
Shit, okay.
So, my number five, Freaky.
Ours, okay. My number four is a movie I have seen 5 times this year.
What?
I absolutely love it.
And yet Wayne has seen 11 films before 2020.
Well, remember now, there was lockdown and you're wanting comfort, okay? So I watched The Gentlemen 5 times.
Oh, I knew this
I fucking love this film. Now look, it may not win Guy Ritchie many new converts. It is essentially the stuff he does, but it's so good. And I think the standout here, probably fucking Hugh Grant, who's being this sort of like cockneyed gangster and shit like that, who's really, really great. Basically,
he's not a
the
gangster.
Narrative.
He's
a reporter or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's the one, but he's sort of in the shit. And he's also the guy narrating, of sorts, the movie by it cutting back and forth to him. Matthew McConaughey, Charlie Hunnam, probably one of the. I don't actually care much for Charlie Hunnam, but I liked him in this role.
No one cares much for Charlie Hunnam except to look at, I think.
No, chicks dig the hell out of him.
To look at.
Oh, I see. Yeah. But all of those things, including making... This is basically the Snatch model where they've got this big American star in a British gangster movie. And, you know, there you go. He's playing an American, though. And I think the whole thing of it, I love it. I don't think it's the best of his stuff, but I think it stands very tall and I think highly rewatchable. I can watch it again now.
Well, you watched it 5 times this year. Mm. I've not watched any film 5 times this year. Because
yeah,
I, you know, recall the fact we have a podcast and content to deliver to people as opposed to someone who goes, I didn't have time to watch that. Is that maybe because you watch fucking Gentlemen again?
Well, what it is when I'm rewatching a film, it's in conjunction with something else I'm doing. So I have 2 screens here.
Right.
So I have watched it. I like it and enjoy it. It's like,
So you jacked off enough times to it that now
exactly.
It propels itself.
Yeah, right. And it's a bunch of Windex later and I'm done. So, all right.
All right. That's your 4.
4.
Ooh, getting high.
That's right, man.
On to my number 4 then, and it is the highest ranking horror film on my list. It's the only film this year that legitimately made me frightened when I watched it for a brief moment or 3.
Hmm.
It is a film which is 56 minutes long. It's called Host, directed by Rob this time, Savage.
I remember you talking about this. Yeah. What's Host about?
Host is basically a bunch of friends during a lockdown, during some kind of... Never said, no one says COVID in the film, but they're in a lockdown to a pandemic. They connect all through Zoom, and one of them organizes to do a seance via Zoom.
Mm.
Of course, a couple of them don't take it very fucking seriously. The medium who she organizes to come and lead this warns them about things they shouldn't do. They fucking do those things. The spirit escapes, or whatever it is, the demon entity, whatever it is, escapes.
Now, is the format you watching 5 Zoom screens?
Yep, it's presented completely as a Zoom screen.
Really clever.
Including even the end credits as sort of presented in Zoom-like fashion.
Hmm.
It's fantastic.
Host. And
it's a Shudder original, so it's an app you now can get in Australia as well, a horror streaming app.
Oh, okay, and you said you found it scary.
Yeah, there's some moments in it where
are we
like,
talking about something appearing in the background, that kind of thing? Those are the scariest things. Those subtle ass, like, oh, there's a face in the window. Oh, fuck! That shit's the stuff that scares you the most.
Exactly the kind of stuff that happens here.
Yeah. 56 minutes.
And again, doesn't outstay its welcome. You get enough about each character to kind of know who they are. There's like 5, 6 of them. That's it. And it was, incredibly, it was directed remotely. So they never got together. This was all done via computers during lockdown.
Okay, on that basis alone... It gets an Ingenuity Award, like bonus, shall we say? And you already liked it as well.
And so Rob Savage came up with the idea when he decided during lockdown, he was trying to scare his friends in a Zoom call. There's rats in the attic, man. I got to go up there. I got to deal with this. I'm scared to do it myself. Can you guys come with me on my Zoom call? And he had set it all up to be this elaborate scare when he got up there, something lurching out of him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then from that, they went, that was so cool. We should do a movie like this. And he generated the idea from
that. That's cool. Does everyone use like their laptop camera?
Yep.
So it's not produced at all. It's just actually, fuck.
As far as I can tell, like I'm sure there's been some correction and
does
color
it suffer
correction.
As a result? Like, how's the sound? Is there any lag? Or does someone not know that they
no,
were on
they,
mute?
No, they play those gags occasionally.
They, okay,
not that everyone's on mute, but like, you know, there's a bit of lots of lagging slash
You know, yeah, yeah, okay. Good. Oh, good, good, because that's actually realistic. So
it adds a realism to it.
God, I fucking hate Zoom. I hate fucking web fucking flaps, whatever.
Yep.
Shit. Can't wait for this fucking bug to fuck away. Anyway, okay.
Yeah. So Rob Savage's Host is my best horror film of the year. Look, it wasn't. It was my number two for a lot of time, but I eventually bumped it up because this is the one that stuck with me. I think this is the new model. Hopefully this is the way, not because of COVID, but this is the way that filmmakers will be prepared to go. Doesn't give a fuck if it's 80 minutes. Who cares? Doesn't have to get to 80 minutes. I would love to have seen a film, maybe not this particular one with the way it's presented, but I'd love to see 55, 56 minute films in a theater at a discounted rate. You know, come in, 15 minutes of trailers and all that bullshit, you're out, and 75 minutes. Cinemas could be able to show extra 3 or 4 screenings a day and then they charge you less because of it.
I would pay more for a shorter movie on some occasions. So I say keep the model, just let everyone know this shit is an hour long.
I just think that would fuck hurt. You. Some people wouldn't go in then. Yeah. You know what I mean? So anyway, all right, that's my number four Host.
Nice one. My number three is a sensationally good New York crime drama called Uncut Gems. That's my Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I think that was an Australian release date, so yep.
Yeah. So everyone.
No, you had this on your fucking list last year, you cheating prick.
Did I?
You did. 100%.
Stiff shit. It's fucking on
Wayne's
this list too.
Number two, I think, last
is
year.
Is it? How can you remember that?
I just
remember. I did not think that at
I
all.
I went and watched it after you had talked it up.
I'm fine with this then. So sure, Wayne, it was on my list. Are you sure?
I feel like I know.
Look, I feel like you would know, but I was looking through all this shit, and it's 2020, Paul.
Everyone, go back, download
it's 2020, Paul.
The best films of 2019 list, and let us know. Did Wayne screw the pooch on this particular occasion?
Paul,
has he cheated again?
Hashtag 2020
by including a film from last year's list on this one. Which, by the way, I would have done with The Lighthouse, which is I did watch it the first week of 2020. But because I counted it last year, as I said to you yesterday, didn't include it again.
Yeah, but I didn't remember I put it on the list last year.
I'm not sure what I'm so shocked by. I should be impressed that there's only one film so far that you had on last year's list.
Fuck it. Uncut Gems is this shit, everyone.
Cock juggling. Thunder cut.
Balls. Most of the people listening wouldn't have heard that last one. They're new. How you doing, kids? Uncut Gems, third best film of 2020. So.
Hashtag 2020.
But the reason this is on here, if Paul says it's right, both lists. Is that it was so... I only saw it once, as by comparison, and...
And why would you watch this movie again?
Because it was... Well, again, it's hard to watch again, exactly. But the one time that I saw again, this is pure nightmare sort of anxiety fuel, this film. You're just pushing out shit, and I'm feeling every minute of it, even though it's a hill to climb to get Adam Sandler and buy him as a dramatic role. I think he does an amazing job. I know there's bias because he does shit like Hubie Halloween.
Oh, God.
And then he goes and does this. So I'm at least glad he's got these chops.
Mm.
But as a movie itself, I can't remember the last time I felt so on edge the entire film while still wanting to watch it. So for me, it's the jam. So Uncut Gems. Good enough for two lists, apparently.
Do you want to give... a quick sort of synopsis, what's happening in
the
film?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I haven't told you that. Adam Sandler is a New York jeweler. Essentially, this is a movie about gangs and crime and shit like that. He's got this particular personality where he likes to bet, much to his detriment. He's happy to get himself into this shit, even though it could kill him. But because he's got that sort of gambler mentality, sickness, illness, whatever that it does. But each scene is him in more and more danger and... big surprises and shocks that happen all the way through the film, even though it's quite locally set. Small shop, inside a car, that kind of thing. Not huge set pieces.
Mm.
It's still very effective for what it does.
Yeah, directed by the Safdie brothers.
Safdie brothers.
Who are known for that kind of shit. So.
Is that so? I don't even...
Good Times is the one before. You haven't seen that yet?
I've seen that. I didn't like it.
Really? It's the same kind of film.
I called it Bad Times. It was...
Damn.
That was Batman was in that one, right?
Yes.
No, I did not care for that one. Anyway, but this one, great.
All right. There you go. Wayne's repeat entry. I think, you know, could be wrong. We'll find out in due course. My number three is a film which Wayne inexplicably does not love, which completely blew my mind because this is the most charming film
of
the year. It's hilarious in places. It stars Andy Samberg and Christian Milioti. Mm-hmm. It's Palm Springs.
Don't get it.
What?
Don't get it.
Jeez.
It was fine. Palm it was Springs, fine.
Fucking great. Funniest film of the year by a country mile.
Oh, come on.
The idea that, so Andy Samberg is a guy who's been stuck in the same day time loop for time, who knows? He has lost complete track. It could be, people have postulated, it could be a decade. It could be 100 years. Mm. He's been going over and over and over and over and over. He's done everything in that time, as the film very amusingly shows you in some great montages. And then eventually, through machinations in the course of the film, a couple of other people come be stuck in the same time loop with him. And it's how the film progresses from there. He's accepted, I'm stuck here forever. This is the way it's going to be. But the other people, or at least one of them, not so much. So I don't want to spoil it any more than that. But it's smart. It's clever. It is engaging. You care about these characters. And it's funny. How could you not like this film, Wayne?
Yeah, I think I was looking for a bit more or something. I think it's an expectation thing.
What, would it take you out? Suck your dick?
Yes. What? Well, it's an Andy Samberg film. Now, remember, I love Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. Yeah. I think it's one of the biggest sleepers ever. So I guess I was looking for that level of class. This is more a ponderous kind of... This is more of an indie film.
Ponderous, he says.
Ponderous, it is. I think... I also think that...
So engaging. It's so fast-paced. It's amazing.
I can't remember how it ends. How's that? I can't remember how it ended. So
this is a film that I would have zero problem having on any of my top 10 lists for...
So good!
The start. So since we started
good!
This podcast.
Not that good.
It wouldn't be number three, but it would definitely be on every list any year it came out.
What happened here? Is it maybe I need to look at it again.
In the same year that you have Invisible Man on your list, I have Palm Springs high on mine.
2020. we're going to have to bounce back to you because 2 is where I put the trailer of Chicago 7.
Guess what? We're going to bounce straight back to you because here's where I put Tenant.
Oh, shit. Then let's just talk about the best movie because we know it's both the same one for both of us.
God, I hope it is, Wayne.
It has, man.
If it is, the only reason you could not have got it is because of the... Not debate. It just came out other places before it came out here in Australia. So before you reveal it, though, let's run through...
Go for it. You go first. You go first. Number 10 was Get Duked. 9, Extraction. 8, Fat Man. 7, Tenet. Or Tenet. 6 was The Personal History of David Copperfield. 5, The Invisible Man. 4, The Gentleman. 3, Uncut Gems. 2, The Trial of Chicago 7. And my number 1.
Hang on, before we do, let's see.
We'll be right after Paul gives us these.
My we count back through my top 10 films of the year. Number 10, The Old Guard. 9, Love and Monsters. 8, The Outpost. 7, VFW. 6, The Trial of Chicago 7. 5, Freaky. 4, Host. 3, Palm Springs, where it should be.
Bitch, please.
Number 2, Tenant, also where it should be. And that brings us to our number 1. And I have
Paul's
zero
the
doubt. I'm going to give a music cue.
Okay, go on.
Here it is.
Yeah, okay.
Number 1 film of 2020. No, not yours.
Paul's playing the Bad Boys for Life theme, everyone. And no, it isn't. My number 1.
I'll throw it away completely.
My number 1 is Honest Thief. Let's just say it together, okay?
All right.
3, 2, 1.
1917. Yeah.
Yeah, boy. All right.
Came out here around about 10th or 11th of January. So I know it came out December 19th in America or 26th in the UK.
It takes a while to get over here, people.
Got here this year. I said it at the time I watched it, there will be no better film this year. There can't be.
Agreed.
I saw it twice at the cinema. I've watched it again on 4K at home. 3 times is the record for me in 2020. I don't even know if I recorded the third time that I watched it. So there you go. We had 246 films for 2020. But absolutely incredible. Just phenomenal filmmaking. Technically the most accomplished film that I can think of since we started the podcast, 100% for sure.
Mm.
People criticize, oh, it's always the vehicle for how special they can make the filmmaking. It hasn't got a good story. Fuck off.
No, it has got a good story.
What else do you need? A couple of guys have got to start on the right side, so to speak, of enemy lines, cross enemy lines to
World
deliver.
World War I set, yep.
Yeah, World War I set to deliver an essential message to a general. Don't fucking attack. It's a trap. Because otherwise, all these thousands of soldiers are going to die.
Die, exactly.
Simple. It's a simple story, but these two characters become fully realized during their journey, as far as I'm concerned. And you care for them. It's Sam Mendes. Just take a bow. I cannot believe. I know it was a fashionable choice.
Presented as one shot, everyone, the entire film.
I know Parasite is a wonderful film as well.
I am so surprised that's not on your list.
Very, very. I think I might have watched it too. I can't remember when I watched it.
Yeah, who knows?
Anyway.
Obviously not me.
I reckon I watched it in 2019. I could be wrong on that.
It's on a lot of people's this year's list.
Yeah, look, I get it. But I didn't love it the way I loved 1917.
No, Parasite was fine, I thought.
Yeah, I'm sure it was last year, Parasite. I saw it in like December last year. Yeah. Otherwise, it may have made this list. It probably would have, to be honest. It would have been, call it around Trial of Chicago 7 level. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 5, 6, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
1917, though. Holy shit. I've never been so blown away. A couple of moments of film made me jump out of my seat. When I took my fiancée to see it the second time, she jumped out of her seat and I was fist pumping. Like, it's so tense in places. It's just stellar filmmaking. It is... film movie magic. You are transported back 104 years ago now, and it's stellar.
The reason it's number one for me is that, like you say, this would be number one, or at least, no, it's been number one in pretty much a lot of years, right? Because you, and sort of spoiled, because you come out of the gate in 2020 for us, and we see this first, and we're like, what the fuck, yeah. Right? And
it was all downhill from there.
It absolutely was, but fine, Cinema so one. Was 2020. So
Hashtag 2020.
So the execution of making it all one shot and making it work the way where the camera floats over seemingly water to follow people and lots
for
of
example.
Shit.
For example,
amazing. But what I really liked about this movie is that you're in the trenches when it starts, you're following someone around. Again, I didn't expect the whole thing to be one shot. I thought there'd be just long one shots, right? But then the whole thing's, well, holy crap, right? It just starts. Like, it doesn't, there's not a lot of preamble where you're trying to set up exposition and this and that. They're in the trenches, they go through, they get an order, they walk out, come on along with me, fine, boom, and they just walk off. Movie starts.
This movie's 2 hours long. Feels like 80.
Doesn't feel it. This is it. If it takes you on that ride and you thought it was short when it was actually long, huge bucket of win, everyone. There's no way that's exactly what a movie should be doing. And this one does it so well. It's, I don't know. Amazing. Exciting as a heist movie, disturbing like a sci-fi nightmare. It's just simple but audacious. I don't know, something really great about it.
Yeah, and again, I think it's all about the planning, and this film took so long to plan and less time to shoot. But even then, even the things that didn't go right during the shoot, they made it work for them. Mm. So yeah, at one point, the main guy, George McKay, is running along, and one of the extras just about trips him up, and he manages to catch his feet. But that just... They kept it in
because
it good just take. Conveyed the desperation and the like are there. So
yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I think George McKay and Dean Charles Chapman, incredible. Some great little supporting nods as well from people like Mark Strong and Andrew Scott and Richard Madden.
I like
1917 was as good as 2020 got, and hooray.
And you know, it's like one of those fortunate things that like he got to shoot this thing before the COVID, obviously. So then it gets released. You'd never be able to shoot this. You might not be able to shoot a movie like this again because it's so like close quarters. Same as Baby Driver. That thing happened before Kevin Spacey got found out. So we got to enjoy it. You know,
yeah, I'm not sure I finished making my point. Parasite, wonderful film. But I think for me, 1917 is a better film. I'm sad that Parasite kind of locked it out from most of its categories.
Parasite was unexpectedly good, and that's why it was great. This movie, you could go in there with expectations and still be satisfied. It's bigger. It's better.
Yeah. There we are. That is our best films of the year. But let's give a few honorable mentions as much as we should bother because...
Bring it.
Geez, my honorables aren't great.
No.
Okay, so I'll run down them. The Mortuary Collection, pretty good anthology horror film. Okay. The Five Bloods, Wayne.
Nope. Wasn't going anywhere near my list.
The Gentleman, a little indie film called The Wave, which I quite enjoy with Justin Long in it. For, again, no expectations. Possessor, which was... David Cronenberg's sons, Brandon Cronenberg's second film, I believe. Mm-hmm. Pretty good as well, pretty disturbing on a lot of people's best of list. The Hunt, His House, Sputnik, and yes, down around number 20 for me, Bad Boys for Life.
Fuck off. What? All right, I don't know what that's about. I only have like three, and I'm kind of only going to tell you two. I liked Guns Akimbo, but no one else did.
Mm.
I liked Enola Holmes, and everyone thinks I'm a girl.
I never saw that one. So.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, you should. Henry Cavill gets poured into that outfit.
I know.
All right.
I don't have a Henry Cavill barring up.
You know what? It ain't about him. It's about the girl. It's about the girl.
Again, a bit young. So
not because I want to do her. Because she's like bright and good to watch. And I sort of Let Him Go was like it satisfied me, but it's not anywhere near a top 10 list. It's good.
Let Him Go was all right.
Let Him Go is okay. Yeah, yeah. Kevin Costner. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, top 25 of 155. Yeah,
like
yeah. It was. 2020,
man. 2020.
All right, well, that's our list. What about yours? Let's wrap it up with the segment that we use to finish every episode. It's called the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with B Dizzle from aforementioned from the We Watch the Thing podcast, good friend of the show. He said, if we're going on Australian release, number three,
we are.
Honey Boy with Shia LaBeouf.
Honey Boy.
Yeah, I've seen it. Not my fave, but Billy obviously loved it.
Hmm.
Number two, Wayne, The Invisible Man.
Yep.
And number one, The Lighthouse, which had I not counted it in last
year. I didn't see this film, don't I?
Which one, Honey Boy?
The Lighthouse.
Lighthouse is very good. I'm not sure you'd like it, though, but yeah.
Okay.
Victims and Villains on Twitter said number three, Soul.
Yeah, okay.
Number two, Sound of Metal, which is a film I'm 2/3 of the way through, didn't finish it. Not because I'm not liking it. It's good. It wouldn't have made my list, so I didn't rush to finish it. And number one, Promising Young Woman, which is a movie I have seen.
How is it? I almost saw it today.
Yeah, it's well worth it. But that would have been American released. For here, it didn't come out until January 7th, so it counts for our 2021, if you think it's in the discussion. I would be fascinated to hear, Wayne, what you thought of Promising Young Woman. So, yeah.
Can you tell me if you liked it?
I did like it.
Okay, good.
This is from a Nerdrivert. Good support of the show. Thank you for your support on Twitter, sir. Number three, Palm Springs. Yeah. Number two, Sputnik. Good Russian horror film. I had that on my honorable mentions. And number one, The Invisible Man again.
Wow.
Kat on Twitter said, this was tough. Is it bad? I thought most movies from 2020 sucked as hard as the year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, here's what I came out with. Number three, The Invisible Man. Elizabeth Moss was fantastic. Number two, Palm Springs. I liked that it was different and kept me entertained. And number one, Extraction.
Yes!
Sorry, Paul.
You're a legend, Kat. We need more people like you.
Oh, jeez.
In life.
You can't handle the truth.
I'm not sure that's aimed at you.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of you.
Probably me. Mario on the bar on Twitter said, first of all, Paul, crossing fingers that Tenet is not your number one. That movie was a huge disappointment. Well, it wasn't. So hooray.
But it was lower down on my list.
It was. Number three, The King of Staten Island.
I never got to it, and I wanted to. Either.
Yellow Rose, I haven't even heard of.
Me neither.
So, okay, sorry, Mario. And number one, The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Boom.
There we go. Tim Cormack said, Love and Monsters, surprisingly not about bestiality. The Hunted, a game of hide and seek with consequences. Don't know if I've seen that one. Mm. Haven't. And of course, Tenet, so good, I watched it today, and then I watched it again yesterday.
That's because you had to figure it out.
Yesterday, he watched it again.
I see what's right, going on here. I see what's going on. Sorry. It took me a little while there.
Thank you, Tim. Your humor is not lost on one half of the podcast. Over to the Facebook list committee then, and Philip Wilson said, Soul, Words on Bathroom Walls, which is a film about a young man with schizophrenia, and Bad Education starring Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman?
Yeah. Have you seen Bad Education?
I haven't. Now, have you?
No, nor have I. Mm. I've heard good things, though.
As have I. I was interested in that.
A lot of critics lists. Jonathan Lamb had number three, Palm Springs, refreshing take on a genre that's full of charm and humor.
There you go.
Nomadland, number two. Beautifully shot and thoughtful movie. Frances McDormand's best performance. Wow. It was better than Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Then it must be a must-see. Mm. And therefore, she will be a shoo-in, surely, for Academy Award.
What are the Academy Awards going to be like this week?
It was not this year.
Sorry, this year. I mean, like,
they're not out till April, so I'm not sure when the cutoff point is for...
It'll just be like hashtag 2020. Yeah.
And Mangrove, a film I've never even heard of. Don't know if this counts, but it's feature-length and phenomenal must-watch of 2020.
Okay. Mangrove, okay. Mm.
Jonathan Kidd said, number three, Defy Bloods.
Didn't make Paul's list.
Honorable mention number 12. Normally, I'm a lukewarm on Spike Lee, but I love this cast story and even direction for once. Number two, Wayne, Get Duked. It seems to list
yes!
a 2019 film online, but I didn't get a release until 20, so fuck it. This joint was hilarious.
Yeah, it's a funny-ass movie.
And number one, probably the most often named film, Palm Springs. In a normal year, this would have been in the bottom 10, but it was a perfect film for 2020 quarantine. Couldn't agree more, Jonathan.
I must have been in such a bad mood when I watched it.
I guess so. Nicole Presley said, thanks, Paul, for the recommend. I really enjoyed Host. Short, to the point, still freaky, and also really well done in terms of feeling real.
Nice.
Smiley Samani, mate to you and I. Number three, another round. Tragic comedy about friendship in excess. It's about a bunch of teachers who just try to find the exact level of drunk and do their job whilst teaching.
Oh, that's good.
I think. Possessor, grippingly, unsettlingly sci-fi, psychological horror. Just mentioned that one briefly. And number one, Deerskin, obsession, insanity, murder, love. A dark black comedy about the length a man goes to for his jacket.
Superb. This guy watches more films than you, man.
Could be.
I'm telling
you. Could be the case. Tony Dobbish said, One Night in Miami, Promising Young Woman, and Sound of Metal were his top three for the year.
What is Sound of Metal?
It's basically a film about a drummer in a metal band who starts to go deaf.
Okay. Yep. Wow.
Movie Chatter Podcast said, so many good movies this year. Whoa. But it's quite tough that these were the best and most memorable that I saw. Three, Anything for Jackson. It's a horror movie. Number two, Sound of Metal again. And number one, Promising Young Woman.
I'm watching that.
Kristen Nakaro had number three, Happiest Season.
Heard of it.
Well, Kay Stew and Mackenzie Davis are lesbian lovers and one of them's out, one of them's not. And they go to the one of them's not's family for Christmas.
On the list.
Right. Enola Holmes at number two. Number one, The Invisible Man. I think you know whose vote you're getting there this week.
Damn right.
Blake Jarvis, another patron to the show, said, because of the crap year, I went off 2020 releases in Australia. Number three, The Gentleman.
Yeah.
Number two, Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Number one, 1917. Reckon you're going to clean up this week, mate.
Legit choice. No, we'll see.
Well, unless it was on your list last time. Last couple then to wrap it up. Kerry Melville had number three, Possessor. Number two, His House. Number one, Invisible Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Ashley Gorski from the Rabbit Ears TV podcast had Borat, a subsequent movie film at number 3.
Wow.
Number 2, Palm Springs, and number 1, Trial of Chicago 7.
There it is.
And finally, David Power, top level patron of the show, had Promising Young Woman, Possessor, and Wolfwalkers, which is an animated film from Ireland, I believe.
Wolfwalkers.
Number 3.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. There Diverse. We are. Thank you so much to everybody who got back to us. Sorry we couldn't get through all your feedback. We really, truly do appreciate it. And that's the best of the year show. Done and dusted.
It's a show right there, kids.
Hashtag 2020. But I think we've got some good films in there and some pretty good films towards the bottom of our lists.
It's all about the chatter, son.
Let us know. What do we miss? What else do you recommend? Or what did you think of the ones that we've talked about today? And Wayne, how do our listeners let us know that?
Google The Countdown Podcast and find everything, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at @thecountdownpc. You can follow, like and follow the show on Podbean, where we host. Check out the app for that, or podbean.com. Facebook is the community, links in the show notes if you want to get involved in discussions about movies and television and the like. And finally, ccradio.com.au for ourselves and some other great Aussie podcasts. All right, Wayne, that's it for episode 302 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. What's happening next week for episode 303?
I believe this fucking list won't move. Sorry.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Sorry, cunt lips. yeah, this is a really old list because I opened the wrong file. So I'll be opening this new file and then telling you as I vamp casually.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
You can suck my dick. Suck on my dick, bitch. Why are you such a bitch? Look at you, you fucking punk ass fuckwit. See, you just lost everyone, you little bitch. It's still going, you fucking cock. All right, fine. You know what? I just opened the right list and I haven't written down what we're doing next. I don't know, Paul. What are we doing next week? Why don't you tell me, man of shitty soundboard sounds?
We are finishing off the patron requested topics from 2020. Sorry, hashtag 2020. And that is from Sai Wazow. We're doing the top 10 TV pilots.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Top 10 TV pilots.
Wayne's happy with that one.
Fantastic.
It's a TV episode, means we get to play a different opener and we'll be fulfilling our obligation to Sai. Thank you, Sai, for your support of the show. Thank you to everyone who supports the show. Thank you to everyone for listening. This big wrap-up of 2020. We really appreciate it. I think that's it, Wayne.
Yeah,
let's get out of here.
If you're new, go ahead and check out our Patreon because there's a lot of bullshit that we talk about there which isn't suitable for general consumption.
I should probably emphasize to the new listener who hasn't and doesn't know about the Patreon, when Wayne says bullshit, he means stuff.
Yeah,
good
stuff.
Things.
Good shit. You're good right. Bullshit, man. The bullshit you want. Your bullshit. My bullshit.
And on that bombshell, let's wrap it up. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
If I didn't love you so damn much, I'd have to kill you, bro.
Oh, Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Twice. At the end of the podcast. Hooray.
Paul, not knowing shit about too much.
We'll catch you next time.
See ya.
And for the record, yes, I got it wrong. It was episode 303, and next week's episode 304.